Domestic violence misconceptions. Domestic violence is a pressing issue often overlooked, yet it claims the lives of 50 women every month in the United States alone. Shockingly, it's the leading cause of death among young African American women. Sadly, many misconceptions surround this crisis, perpetuating its existence. Blaming the victim is a common but misguided response. Statements like, "She should have left," or "She made bad choices," only deepen the problem. Moreover, there is a prevailing notion that what happens in a home is nobody's concern, leading to the belief that injuries sustained by women in domestic disputes are minor and insignificant. Law enforcement, too, sometimes fails to grasp the severity of domestic violence. They may disregard repeated calls from the same household, not realizing the danger inherent in such situations. Often, society views domestic violence as a private nuisance, trivializing its impact and dismissing it as a distraction for law enforcement. Enable change in domestic violence. For ages, women worldwide were considered the possessions of men, subject to their whims. Shockingly, even today, some male abusers claim to love the women they harm. Moreover, societal pressures often lead women to believe that their children need a father figure, even if he's harmful. Compounding this, the legal system often fails victims by putting them on the defensive and charging perpetrators with minor offenses. In the 1970s and 1980s, the women's movement fought against these unjust beliefs and practices. It gained momentum, especially with the publicity surrounding the O.J. Simpson trial, leading to the passage of the Violence Against Women Act in 1994. However, despite these strides, programs and shelters aimed at helping battered women continue to suffer from chronic underfunding. Why victims stay with abusers? Sometimes victims of abuse stay with their abusers because leaving can be incredibly dangerous. Take the case of Michelle and Rocky Mosier. Rocky showed signs of being abusive for years, using drugs and isolating Michelle from her family. He even hurt her in front of their kids. When Michelle tried to leave, Rocky threatened her and stalked her. Although she got a restraining order, Rocky's parents got him out of trouble, and he easily got a weapon. Michelle lost hope in the law protecting her. She tried to leave, but out of fear for her life, she took back her accusations against Rocky. She hoped this would buy her time to escape, but tragically, Rocky ended up shooting her and their children before taking his own life. Campbell's research points to previous incidents of domestic abuse as the strongest predictor of future violence. The risk peaks within 3 months after a victim leaves an abusive relationship, but then drops significantly over time as partners adjust to the separation. Campbell identified 22 key risk factors that signal potential danger, such as substance abuse, forced sex, stalking, financial struggles, unemployment, threats of violence, social isolation, and especially, strangulation. Nearly 60% of homicide cases involve a history of strangulation, which often precedes lethal violence. Stricter laws in 45 states that classify strangulation as a felony have played a role in reducing homicide rates. The role of guns in domestic abuse homicides. In the United States, guns play a big part in domestic abuse homicides. Some people argue that having a gun can make a woman safer because she can protect herself. But David Adams, who leads an organization against domestic violence, talked to 14 killers and shared their thoughts with Congress. He found out that the risk of homicide goes up 8 times when there's a gun involved, and the person holding the gun has the power. Surprisingly, 11 of those killers admitted they wouldn't have killed if they didn't have a gun. But there aren't many laws allowing the police to take guns away from people with a history of stalking or domestic violence, especially at the federal level. Having access to guns is one of the top 3 signs that someone might commit homicide in a domestic abuse situation. Did you know that 14% of police officers who die on duty are responding to calls about domestic violence? Even though a lot of women have guns at home, most of them don't feel safer because of it. In fact, more than half of them think we need stronger laws about guns. And here's an eye-opener. Domestic violence often predicts mass shootings. But a study by the FBI didn't even mention that connection. In our society, we often teach women not to use violence, but we should be teaching everyone, including men, to be nonviolent. It's crucial for stopping domestic abuse and even preventing mass shootings. Man Alive Program. In San Francisco's San Bruno Jail, there's a program called Man Alive that's changing lives. Started by Hamish Sinclair in 1980, it gained importance after the Violence Against Women Act of 1994. California law made it compulsory for violent men to attend this program or face jail time. Sonny Schwartz, a prison guard, added Man Alive to the Resolve to Stop the Violence Project, RSVP, at San Bruno. RSVP has two main parts, Man Alive and Restorative Justice. Restorative Justice lets men hear real stories from female victims of domestic abuse. The aim is to make them understand the impact of their actions and see their victims as real people. 20 years later, RSVP has proven to lower the number of repeat offenders. But surprisingly, not many states have adopted similar programs. Most focus on helping survivors rather than educating abusers, even though teaching men not to be violent benefits everyone. Communication gaps must be bridged. Dorothy Junta Cotter's tragic death at the hands of her husband, William Cotter, could have been prevented. Despite getting a restraining order with the help of social worker Kelly Dunn, Dorothy chose to stay home, where her husband posed a danger. William broke the restraining order, attempted to abduct her at gunpoint, and then got released on bail. The judge didn't hear Dorothy's sworn statement about years of abuse, nor did they consult Dunn. Upon release, William returned home and held Dorothy hostage, ending in a tragic outcome. Kelly Dunn's mission became assessing the risk for women like Dorothy and finding alternatives to shelters. One big problem was the poor communication between crisis centers and the police. Gender differences and a lack of trust worsened the situation. Domestic violence cases often don't get treated like regular crimes, making it harder for law enforcement to take decisive action. Improving communication between agencies and law enforcement is vital to preventing such tragedies. By breaking down these barriers and treating domestic violence as the serious crime it is, we can save lives and protect those in danger. Create a comprehensive abuse response team. Dunn spearheaded the formation of a team to tackle abuse issues, bringing together experts from various fields such as emergency services, courts, prisons, police, and advocacy groups. They set up a central hub at the crisis center to streamline communication. This team met every month to discuss cases with high risks, increasing support for battered women and children. Dorothy Junta Cotter faced a tough choice: stay with her abusive husband or uproot her family and seek shelter. Like many others, she hesitated to disrupt her children's lives. But here's the harsh reality. Victims often feel trapped, forced to decide between enduring abuse or leaving everything behind. The justice system sometimes fails to grasp this dilemma. It might label victims as not afraid enough if they refuse shelter. This isn't fair. Domestic violence shouldn't strip away basic rights. Even worse, victims can lose homes due to abuse complaints, yet struggle to find new housing because they've stayed in shelters. But there's hope. Transitional housing and financial support can make a real difference. Take Peg Haxkilo's initiative in Washington, D.C. In 2006, with just 48 shelter beds available despite thousands of domestic violence calls, she knew something had to change. So, she spearheaded Cornerstone, offering 43 apartments for survivors. Haxkilo also works with landlords to secure affordable housing elsewhere. She didn't stop there. Haxkilo started the Survivor Resilience Fund, SRF, to provide financial assistance. This helps survivors regain stability and pursue justice. By giving them resources, programs like DASH and SRF send a clear message to abusers: our community won't tolerate their actions. Empowering battered women isn't just about finding shelter. It's about giving them options, support, and a chance to rebuild their lives. Protecting victims. In an ideal world, we'd have programs all over that stop violence before it starts. But sadly, in many places, domestic violence is only seen as a small crime. That's where Dunn's high-risk team in Massachusetts steps in. They use a law called Bail Statute 58A to figure out how dangerous an abuser is. This law allows them to keep a dangerous person in custody for up to 180 days without bail. This keeps victims safe at home, away from shelters, and gives them time to get back on their feet. There's another way to deal with abusers, called evidence-based prosecution. Instead of locking them up before trial, it relies on proof like photos, 911 calls, witness statements, and past records. This means victims don't always have to testify in court. But there's a problem. In 2004, the Supreme Court said defendants have the right to face their accusers. So if victims don't want to cooperate, their statements might not count. Between 2010 and 2016, gun makers in the U.S. made over 10.9 million guns. The states with the most guns per person also have the most domestic violence deaths. States like South Carolina, Tennessee, Nevada, Alaska, Arkansas, Montana, and Missouri are the worst. Sadly, America is the most dangerous place for women when it comes to gun violence. But if we get social workers and cops talking better and stop the violence before it gets worse, we can change this and save lives. Key points. 1. Victims stay due to fear and lack of support, urging better communication between law enforcement and support services. 2. Programs like Man Alive educate abusers, tackling violence at its roots. 3. Communication bridges can prevent tragedies like Dorothy Junta Cotter's death. 4. Abuse response teams streamline victim support, preventing further violence. 5. Transitional housing and financial aid empower survivors beyond shelter. 6. High-risk teams keep abusers in custody, ensuring victim safety. 7. Effective intervention against gun violence demands improved communication between social workers and law enforcement.